Hi, it's Tony Bruschi from The Grave Talks. Coming up in several weeks, we're going to be playing an awesome interview I just did with the grandson of Ed and Lorraine Warren, Christopher Edward McKinnell. In it, we talk about everything from Amityville to The Conjuring to Annabelle to what it was like, personal stories growing up as the grandson of one of the most famous paranormal investigative teams in history. It's a really intimate look at that life with that amazing family. You can, of course, wait to hear it when it comes out in June, or I can send it to you right now in its entirety, part one and part two. But here's what I need from you so I can send you that email with that download link to that full hour-long episode. We are looking for more listeners to our program. People finding out that we even exist is sometimes of quite a feat. Apple Podcasts is where a majority of downloads to podcasts occur. You may or may not be aware of that, but that is where a lot of people find the show to begin with. So what I need from you is a review, basically. Go to Apple Podcasts and leave The Grave Talks a review, and then send me a screenshot. Let me know that you left that review. Send it to Tony at realghoststoriesonline.com. And when you do that, I will reply back with a private link to that episode of the program months before it is released. You'll get the full thing, not just part one. You'll get part one and part two as a thank you. This is a limited offer. It's only going to stand till about the end of May of 2019. If you want in on getting this episode way in advance, just do that review. I think you're going to love this episode, and your help in this process of letting folks know that we exist is tremendously helpful. You see, when you leave that review, it helps other people know that we exist who are interested in the same topic. So it really does good for the whole community out there who are searching for shows like this, who are brand new to the world of podcasting. So please leave that review. Go to Apple Podcasts. That's where this is really going to count. Even if you are not an Apple member or you don't use Apple Podcasts, you can create an account and leave a review. Do that. Send me the screenshot. I will get you the episode. So take a minute, 2 minutes to get it done. And boom, you're going to get this episode, part one and part two, in its entirety, full hour-long interview, for free, as a thank you for that gesture of support. My email again, tony@realghoststoriesonline.com. That's where you send the proof. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for the support. Now, on with today's episode. Today on The Grave Talks, a new Amityville horror. While this story does not take place in Amityville, New York, it carries many similarities to the horrors endured at 112 Ocean Avenue many, many years ago. Striking details right down to the iconic eye-shaped windows adorning the top level of the home, which made the Amityville Horror a household name. This story takes place in Franklin, Virginia. It is the account given by an innocent family of three who battled seemingly demonic forces in what should have been otherwise a peaceful home that they would have loved for many years to come. What do you do when a dark force seems to attach itself to your loved ones, clouding their judgment and reasoning skills? What do you do when you constantly feel repressed and even attacked in your own home, in every room? What do you do when you feel your child's safety may be in danger by an unseen force? Today, we talk with paranormal investigator Jackie Tomblin about her encounters and discoveries when investigating this house of horrors.
It's located in Franklin, Virginia. It's a very small town in the country. It's a beautiful, beautiful home. It has the wraparound porch. It's an old farmhouse, and we laughed when we pulled up to it because it has the Amityville windows around the chimney. And it was funny because when Tiffany originally contacted me, this was her own hell and her own Amityville. Mm-hmm. Now, she contacted several people and couldn't get anyone to come out there. She had cleared to come out there to bless the home. They just refused to return. It was a nightmare for them. They were literally living a nightmare.
When they first got to the home, when they first started renting the home, what was going through their minds? What were they feeling at the home initially?
Paradise. this was a beautiful farmhouse on a beautiful setting, and she has horses, and she has all these animals, and there's this large barn, and it's just, it is picture perfect. It is everything they want.
They get there. They have a daughter that's there that they're just,
yes, it's Georgia.
It just feels like home, like they found their perfect place. How was the dynamics of the family between Tiffany and Billy and Georgia at that time when they first got into the house?
Wonderful. I mean, it's like a dream come true. Granted, they were hoping to do a rent to own. They, you know, the owner wasn't on board with that. But this setting of this home and this farm was just absolutely picture perfect. It really was. Now, on the day before they signed the contract, before they signed the lease on the property, of course, Tiffany went around taking pictures of the home.
Mm-hmm.
And everything was going along just fine. Later on, after things started occurring, and she went back and looked at those pictures, there is a man's face in the upstairs window. Just as plain as day. And she had not noticed that before.
When she was going around and taking pictures, and when they had, you know, the chance to look at the place and decide if this is going to be where we're going to make our home, was there?
Oh, absolutely. You know, she's taking those pictures. Yeah. She's excited. She's sending it to family and friends. Look what we're about to rent.
Yeah.
This is perfect. This is everything we could have ever imagined.
Were there any elements? And this may be kind of a retrospective thing that she looks back on and answers, but were there any elements, because we hear this quite often, where it's like, this is almost too good to be true? Was there any of that?
Yes.
Okay. Like, what were
yes.
they? What were some
Matter
of those
fact,
points?
Those were her words to me. Because it was everything they wanted, and then some. That wraparound porch has a breezeway that cut through the house. It was ideal, and it allowed the fencing of the area, allowed the horses in the front yard.
Mm-hmm. Was there any red flags initially to the too good to be true element of this is going for such a low price or anything of that nature as far as rent or anything that may have stood out going, wow, this is great. How can this be?
I think the one concern was, you know, it is a farmhouse.
Mm-hmm.
It was older, and you know, what it was going to cost to heat it.
Ah.
You know? But that was the only, you know, I mean, that cost to them would be compensated for having everything they ever want.
Sure. Sure. And no inklings from the person they were renting from that there may be something more to this home.
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
So they get into the house, they start their life there. How long does it go in peaceful serenity and bliss before red flags start popping up?
Initially, I'd have to go back to pull my file, but I'm going to say approximately 2 months.
Okay. What were some of those first things that were happening in that home that made them raise their eyebrows at least?
The dining room that adjoins the kitchen,
mm-hmm.
there is a door that goes into a crawl space. There's two different sets of flights of stairs in this home. And this one crawl space door just seems to open. It's always open. Like every time she walks through the room, she's closing that door. And she said, you know, you don't think about it because, you know, you're looking at an old house with hardwood floors, and maybe if you hit the wrong floor, board on the floor, whatever, it pops that door open. So they put a latch on it. And she came in and still found that door open. And she said that she didn't question it until they latched the door. And apparently they were sitting at the dining room table that night, and it wasn't a real fancy dining room, it was just where they ate. And they were sitting there talking about it, and the door opened in front of them. And what she described to me was it didn't just pop open, that door swung open. And I believe that was the first occurrence where they started to question things. Initially, while she called me in, wasn't so much the activity in the home. Her animals were dying.
Oh.
These were in the barn. There was a very, very large rabbit. It's a name for this rabbit, which I don't remember. She lost basically all of her animals.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she originally contacted me on. And she says, I know you think this is crazy. She said, but I think it's the house.
Was there anything beyond, obviously, we have the door that's opening, we have the animals that are dying, and you had mentioned that she had looked at trying to contact several other people prior to you as well without getting any sort of a response or any sort of agreement to come out. Were there other occurrences that were going on that were troubling to them that they were attributing to being paranormal?
Well, going back to Amityville, she says, do you remember the flies in the kitchen? The large flies. She said, that has happened twice, that I've walked in the kitchen and my counters are covered. She said, they're not the size of horse flies, but they're larger than flies. And when I come back in the room, they're gone, not a trace of anything. And she said, and the only one that has seen this is me, so Billy thinks she's nuts. Basically, she was attacked during her sleep. To which Billy was home, and Billy traveled at this point in time, okay? Mm-hmm. So a lot of times it was just Tiffany and Georgia in the home. And she was attacked in her sleep to where he could visibly see the scratch marks on her and know that they weren't hers. And not only that, there was one on her back that he just knew for a fact she couldn't reach. So it's not something she did in her sleep.
What is going through Billy's mind if he's not present there because he's on the road, but he's hearing these stories and then eventually seeing those scratch marks? How is that affecting their relationship? What's going on in his mind?
It's getting bad.
You know?
It's getting really bad because, you know, he's not really on board with this. This is an old house. It's going to creak. It's going to, you know, things like that. And at this point, he's scared that Tiffany is going to scare Georgia. So, yeah, things are starting to get pretty heated between her and Billy.
So he's not truly, do you believe, looking back at this, that he was not truly believing it, or was he too scared to accept what the other possibility might be here in reality?
Looking back on it, I think he was in agreement with us coming in for an investigation to prove there was nothing there.
So he thought you were going to come in and you were going to be the answer saying, nope, the house is clean. It's just an old house.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. He was on board with the investigation. You know, he did share that his personal experiences weren't what hers were, you know? And, but they were fighting about it quite often. She was scared of the home. Georgia was scared of the home. He could not deny the fact the animals were dying, you know? And he says, you know, if this is what it takes to give us some peace of mind, then I'm on board.
Did he have any personal experiences other than being present and witnessing the animals dying?
Other than witnessing the animals dying, he had witnessed the marks on her back.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't think Billy had, you know, any experiences. He said, you know, Tiffany would speak of hot spots or cold spots. He said, look at the house, you know.
Sure.
It's an old, airy house. So, you know, he said, you know, he just didn't really have. But like I said, at that time, Billy was traveling pretty hard.
Yeah.
You know, so it was just Tiffany and Georgia in the home.
When Tiffany came to you and asked for your help and you were asking her what was going on, did she have any assumptions? Did she have any direction as to what or who she thought might be in the house other than just there are unexplained things happening here?
I think the worst thing was when Tiffany came to me and I listened to her and I told her I'd come out through the walkthrough, I was sitting on a 3-month waiting list.
Okay.
And I told her, I said, you're going to have to get through that 3 months. She didn't. We had to move things around and go sooner. But it just kind of broke my heart to let her know, I can't get to you right now.
Sure.
And she's also an hour and a half from me. Franklin is an hour and a half from me. And the day that I went out there to do the initial walkthrough and meet with her and Billy, we did so while Georgia was in school. And I knew then we need to come sooner. One of the things when we were going through the walkthrough of the home was upstairs in her master bedroom. I was running a voice recorder as we did the walkthrough of the home, and nothing was out of line as far as EMS for an old farmhouse. You know, nothing jumped out as alarming, but in the master bedroom, how do you describe it? You know, that creepy feeling where your skin crawls?
Sure.
Had that when I walked in the room, but standing at one of the windows, which is the same window she had found the man's picture in, on the voice recording, you hear like a deep breath behind me. And it does it three times. And of course, we didn't hear it audibly at that point in time. The barn just carried a feeling of a heavy oppression I could not describe. You know, and I said, we will see what we can shift around and get here as soon as we can. And I said, the other thing I got to factor in, too, how many cameras is it going to take to cover this place?
Yeah.
This was a huge location with that barn. We actually ran, I think, 12 cameras.
Wow. Tell me about the picture that you found in the window.
The picture that I found in the window, I mean, when she sent me the picture, the first thing I'm going to look at is the meta tag to make sure that picture hasn't been tampered with.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an original file. It was an older man. You could see he had a white beard. I mean, it was very visible. And what was so alarming, it's the second floor. Mm-hmm. You know? And it's like, you go through everything from the sun reflection to what? No, this isn't actually a man standing in this window.
Mm-hmm. When you went through the house and you had that walkthrough and you were feeling these things, so would you say that it was your choice to move this up, to really get in there with an investigation because of everything you felt when walking through that home?
It was my choice, and then, of course, the calls from Tiffany. They were day and night.
Yeah.
And she just had nobody to talk to, nobody to have any understanding to this, you know? And there were certain red flags that I got from Tiffany in those calls, you know? It's calling me laughing at 1 p.m. in the afternoon and say, you know what? That door will actually open when I tell it to, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And thinking that that's funny. And then at 4 p.m. call me crying because the rocking chair in the living room is rocking on its own. So it was, I'm trying to determine if she is scared of it or if she is communicating with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I later did find that she was communicating with it. And it was just, you know, it was just something we knew we needed to get to and get them some answers right away. Matter of fact, when I went in for the investigation, her and Georgia were living in a hotel at that point.
And is Billy still at the house?
Billy was out of town and like, Jackie, I can't afford this.
Okay.
You know, so that was another reason. I mean, they had physically left the location.
Yeah. Their goal, I'm assuming, was ultimately to be able to get back into the house, though, was it not?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, this is not a location that I can imagine anyone would want to give up.
Sure.
Particularly if you're a horse family.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I was just, now on that walkthrough, I met the rabbit. I met her puppy. Between the walkthrough and the investigation, both of those died.
What's going through your mind after that walkthrough and prior to you getting in there for a more in-depth investigation? What are you thinking is going on here?
I've never investigated a barn, and it's cold outside, so we're going to have to dress for that, but I want as much coverage of that barn as we can get. Something is going on in that barn.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very clean barn. It's very well maintained. The structure itself is good, you know, but something is going on in that barn. And later on, talking to Tiffany, I learned that she's had a miscarriage. And this is a very common report in a demonic case. So she really wanted us to focus on the master bedroom, the kitchen, and the barn. these were the primary places of her experience. She said, don't get me wrong, I have experiences all throughout the house, but the most often occurrences are the master bedroom, the kitchen, and the barn. So, I mean, it was just kind of getting everything and to make sure that those cameras are adjoining.
Yeah.
That was a very big deal to us, that those cameras had to be adjoining. There can't be a dead spot anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her, I said, I'm coming in with several people. I'm coming in with a lot of equipment, and I will probably be there all night. And that's exactly what happened.
What is your goal, Jackie, as an investigator, when you come in to investigate a home like this? At the end of the investigation, is it to just identify what's going on? Is it to get rid of what's going on? What is your set goal when you have something like this?
Well, I mean, we have no way to clear it.
Mm-hmm.
We have no way to get rid of it. And I know that's kind of shocking because I work full-time as a psychic, and people think I carry that fairy dust. I do not, you know?
Sure.
I am here to see what is going on, what I can validate. What we can say, we cannot explain. We will outsource to other people if need be. You know, what we cannot explain. And basically, if it's harmless, and most of them are, you know, most of them are random occurrences. It could be a loved one trying to communicate with them. It, you know, it was nothing to the magnitude of what she was going through. So, I mean, we really didn't know what to expect, and that's why I said it's going to take a while. All these cameras, all this audio, it's going to take a while for us to go through everything once it's done. You know, I'm not going to have an answer tomorrow.
Sure.
You know, and that put her in a bad spot because they're in a hotel,
yeah.
You know. And it's very often that things will get worse when we leave. Very common. You know, I tell people don't communicate, don't pay it any mind. It usually dies down within a couple of days. What I did not expect is everybody on my team having problems the next day when they come home.
And I want to, and I
two
definitely.
Separate team members lose their pets. I had three in bed sick. I had one sick the night of the investigation. It was awful.
And I want to talk more about that in depth. First, let's talk about the investigation itself. Walk us through that investigation night when you get to the property. How does it go, piece by piece?
The minute I get to the property, she comes out and says, we have a problem. We have no heat. There's no heat in the location. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I want to point out it's a 30-degree night,
oh,
and we have
gosh.
No heat.
Okay.
She recruits some friends. They come over to there. Is a wood stove in the living room, and she is recruiting electric heaters. And this is how we're going to run, because there is no heat in the location. Well, that kind of takes out that whole area of airflow is off the table now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sure.
And, you know, I mean, she's excited that we're there. Georgia was not, of course, you know, they sent Georgia away. Georgia doesn't even know this investigation is occurring. Billy is out of town. And so it's her and a couple of her friends, and, you know, a couple of my guys helped her get the heat straight, get the fire going, get the heater set up, space them out, just so we're not going to freeze to death. She's obviously not going to spend the night there after we leave.
Sure.
You know? So it's just enough to heat that location, maybe keep her pipes from busting, and rolling on with the evening. And our setup, I'm going to be honest with you, it took over an hour. And it was just that precise, making sure the cameras adjoined each other throughout the house, you know? And the barn, we were not able to run a stationary camera out there. We had battery packs. We had the handheld cameras ready to go to the barn. As a matter of fact, the evening started in the barn. One of the first problems we had, three different voice recorders, two Olympus, one Sony, laying on the workbench in the barn, kept powering off. Fresh batteries, three different recorders, would not stay on. We went inside, figured we'd get to the barn later. Right now, we need to see what was going on with the voice recorders. As soon as I got inside, I have someone that's got a digital camera going around taking photography, says, I've got a camera problem. Look at these photos. Everything I take in the dining room has lines running through it. And she's like, you try it. And I did. And it was the only room that would produce these lines. And they were just black lines running through the photos. So it's not the camera, because the kitchen, which adjoins it, and then the breezeway adjoins it, those photos are fine. But the dining room, they're all black lines. And then the Tiffany comes to me and says, can you film where you pick up the bathroom off the dining room? She said, that light comes on by itself. So we rearranged the camera in that dining room to pick up the entrance of the bathroom. So, I mean, the evening began, it was, you know, what can I say? It's, we carried on like a regular investigation like we would any other home. Some things that were noticed, like I said, from the beginning, three voice recorders won't run in the barn. There is a problem with a high-end Nikon camera. And then we have another report of, Jackie, look at this. And I turn around, look, and they're in the breezeway. And she says, right here in the breezeway, because that wood stove is running, she said, it is 74 degrees right here. I said, correct. She says, why can you see my breath? Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
And Tiffany, what Tiffany really wants out that kitchen, she wants somebody to see those flies in the kitchen. Well, 30 degree night, I can tell you, there's no fly around.
Sure.
You know, but that's what she's really wanting to come out of that kitchen.
As the evening progresses and as you continue this investigation in the cold, what sort of things did you find and did you pick up on throughout the night?
Well, my daughter, who was with us, was the one that was sick. She got sick the moment we got there. So we put her in the room with the monitor, which was in the living room with the wood stove. And she's watching the monitor, and she's like, you know, she said, there are orbs. You know, your regular dust orbs, because we're looking at a farmhouse. We got hardwood floors and all like that. She says, but there is specifically one that turns that hallway corner and goes up and down the steps. So we sat down and watched the monitor with her, and you could visibly see it. It's like it made a direct turn to go up the steps. And she says, now if you wait a few minutes, you'll also see it come down the steps, turn back around the corner, and come up the hallway. So this is things that we're watching on the monitor, because that hallway is adjoining that living room. And I asked her, you know, I said, outside of being sick, she says, I feel like I'm being watched. You know, and I think everyone had that sensation of being watched, and it really dawned on me when we went upstairs to that master bedroom. You know, I've got a very energetic team of people here, you know? Mm-hmm. This is the thing. This is the exciting part. It's the investigation. We get in the bedroom, and nobody has a question to ask. Nobody. And I'm like, this is so odd, because they're usually firing off questions so fast, I'm slowing them down, you know? So you can pick up that audio response. Mm-hmm. And dead silence. No, it's like no one wanted to speak. And the oppression you felt in that room was just incredible.
It's like they knew you were there and they didn't want to be sensed or messed with.
Right, right. And the back bedroom window is a direct view of that barn. So we're standing there, and at one point, we're watching the window in the barn, and we're watching the barn, and two of my investigators thought I had walked off, said there's red lights in the barn. And I said, really? And I went and got Tiffany, and Tiffany says, no, there's no lights in the barn. None. And I'm like, she said, Jackie, there's no power in the barn. There's no electricity out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so they headed back out to the barn. And I stayed inside for a few more minutes. If you look at our live footage, you will hear the audio when that heater goes off. The electric heater that is running upstairs in the master bedroom has an emergency shut off. So if you kick it or touch it, it throws this loud beeping sound that scared us all to death. the thing about it was, no one was even on that side of the room when it happened. So at that point, we head out to the barn. Nothing's going on in the barn. You don't feel the oppression now in the barn like you did in that bedroom. And we're taking photos. And they're still framed photos. And someone says, you know, is that a white mist? Well, we can't tell. Not only is it 30 degrees, it's raining. Okay? So it's like, I don't know, but we start taking pictures of it. That white mist in front of us turned to a black shadow. That black shadow rose to the top of the barn, and we got the photos of that in front of us, and we cleared out of the barn. And the best I can describe that, I have never felt so small in my life. This, whatever was, grew to the height of that barn. Never seen anything like it. It did start as a light mist. It went to the top. Also, the barn entrance is a very large entrance. I mean, you can drive a truck in it, okay? There are two horses that are out. And if they've got any horse people listening, they know what horse sense is. Horses do not like to stand in the rain. I'm standing in that barn for them to come to me with a fresh salt lick, oats, and fresh hay, and they're looking at me like, lady, you lost your mind. I am not coming in there. And they are not coming in that barn. They opted to stay out in the rain. And the whole investigation, those horses would never enter the barn.
Did you ever feel yourself or any of your team was in any sort of danger during the investigation, as you were seeing the behaviors of the animals and with what you were witnessing as far as the activity?
At one point, it's getting late at night. We are gathered at the dining room table. Okay. My daughter thinks that she has seen on camera that bathroom light come on, but she's not certain. And, of course, I won't let them stop recording to review on an investigation. But she's most certain that Tiffany's right, that bathroom light comes on. We're sitting at that dining room table, and we're talking, and we're recording, and we're just kind of just taking in everything. When one of my girls says, something just moved outside that window. When we looked outside the window, there is a coyote, okay? Now, she's in coyote country, so that wasn't surprising. To see it up on the house was very surprising. The moment that coyote appeared, the smell of death come in that room to the point it was nauseating. And the best I can describe it, it smelled like a rotten body. It come out of nowhere. It was absolutely nauseating to the point we threw the lights on and left the room. It was just unbelievable. And at that point, I'm wondering, what exactly are we dealing with?
Yeah.
What just caused that to happen? And then Tiffany comes to me. She said, did I ever report about the bleeding walls? I'm like Amityville. She said, yeah. She says, mine don't bleed. They ooze something. Come here and look. Well, on that breezeway wall, which is outside that dining room, I swear to you, it looks like Karo syrup coming from the top where the seam of the ceiling and that wall meet, and it's dripping down the wall. It's thick. It's sticky. We questioned always if we were able to capture that in a test tube, would it have evaporated?
Yeah.
The guys go upstairs to the room above and literally pull up part of the floor where that, you know, what is overhead of us.
Sure.
And cannot explain what is coming down the walls. So when we go downstairs with the handheld camera because we want a close shot of this, it is not there. Not only is it not there, that wall is dry and it's like it never happened. Never happened.
So there's no way to get a sample or anything of that nature because it is gone.
No, it was just gone. I'm like, it's six of a thought, you know?
Yeah.
And she said, this is what I'm talking about with the flies. No one has seen it but me. No one has seen this but me. And we're like, we didn't get it recorded, but we have six people that saw it.
Yeah.
you know, and it was just, I mean, how did you explain that? That's not a normal occurrence on any investigation.
No, I mean, those are things that people, when they think of ghost investigators who are not ghost investigators, they think, oh, this stuff happens. This is like typical of a haunting. No, this is not typical of a haunting at all. This is
atypical. None of this should be happening. There's no doubt. Yeah. This is not normal.
No.
You know, stuff oozing from the walls. This is not normal.
Yeah.
What we saw turn into that shadow. This is not a normal haunt by any means.
That wraps up part one of our interview with Jackie Tomlin. In part two, what is a substance that begins bleeding out of the walls? Who or what does Jackie believe is the cause of this haunting? Does Jackie believe there's something demonic in the house? What happens to Jackie's team the day after the investigation? How abnormal or extreme was this case compared to others that have been investigated? And did any of these entities attach themselves or possess anyone involved with the house? We'll answer those questions and more in part two of our interview. To hear part two, become a gravekeeper through our website at thegravetalks.com. Click Become a Gravekeeper. Or directly through Patreon at patreon.com/thegravetalks. It's only $5 a month. You'll have access to all of our exclusive part two interviews on all of our episodes, as well as advanced access to our episodes months before they go public. Some great extra perks right there that support our show, keep us on the air, and give you plenty of content week after week. We post our episodes as we make them to our gravekeepers. Patreon.com/thegravetalks to keep this show in the air and to get all of those extras. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.